John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
8 minutes after 8 o'clock, and Bill Rock, you got it right again. Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling of News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, John. Happy 4th.
Absolutely.
Two,
very
exciting.
2 or 3 days
later.
Yeah.
It is going to be exciting. The Macy's fireworks, I said to the guy, Robin Hall, who runs, he runs the fireworks and the Thanksgiving Day parade. I said, you know, you got to beat last year, and your boss is going to be there. So a lot of pressure.
Weather looks perfect for it, too.
Great weather's going to be perfect. The Hudson River from the mid-20s up to the 70s. No booze. Don't bring it. You can have a good time, but you can't bring alcohol. And from both the Manhattan and Jersey side, it's just going to be unbelievable.
Always is. It's the best show in town come 4th of July.
Parade on Staten Island to start the day. Wind up in Manhattan with fireworks. What could be better?
And the beaches, the lifeguards are on duty.
Just be careful. We've already had a few great tragedies. The ocean is dangerous. It just is. There are all these riptides, and unless there's a lifeguard there, you're just trying to cool off is one thing, but risking your life to do it doesn't make a lot of sense. And these young kids, one after another.
But the lifeguards are there now. Certainly.
Lifeguards are there, yep. And
in the pools.
It doesn't mean you shouldn't be careful as well. You don't eat and rush right into the water and that sort of thing.
I know before the budget was signed, they were talking about closing some pools down.
We found the money for, I think it was 4 pools. And okay. Yeah. You know, each of these things, they're small, but when you say to the commissioner, you got to cut, and we're going to do that again and again and again going forward, it would appear. And, you know, they've got to, if there's 10 pools, maybe they'll cut a couple. If there's 5 of this, they'll cut one. If there's 20 of that, they'll cut 2 or 3. They've got to, you got, everybody says, yeah, let's not spend. And then when they realize what that means, oh, no, no, this is more important. And every one of my commissioners will say, I understand the cut, but this is the most important thing for the city. And they're supposed to be advocates for that. I guess it's the mayor's job, and over in the city council, the speaker's job, Christine Quinn, to say you can't do everything, and okay, we're going to cut. This is, and you see that Christie's doing that in New Jersey. Nobody likes it, but in the end, and then, you know, the public says, well, I don't want any layoffs, but they want less taxes. All our money, fundamentally government's money, goes to pay employees. And so if the public wants to spend less, they're going to have fewer employees. You can make a good argument, and I will in a lot of cases support the workers and say, no, we need these people. But understand that you can't have it both ways.
How many people in the next year are going to be affected by this budget, lose their jobs?
In the city?
Yeah, the city.
Our city employment's roughly 300,000. It's a little bit, you know, like all things, they're complex numbers because you have full-time equivalents. Some people only work. If you have 5 people, each works one day, you get one full-time person, but it's 5 people. It will not be a big number given the budget we passed.
Which you don't know is real.
I can tell you every day it gets less real. Because every day that goes by, it's less likely that we are going to get the Medicaid subsidies that we want from Washington.
The budget that was passed by the legislature has the $1 billion of FMAT money in it. Does your budget have the money in it or out?
No. We have $300 million in it for this year and $300 million in it for the following year. And I have said that by October, and in fact, it'll have to be a little bit earlier, if they don't come through and if there's no reasonable likelihood of it, we'll have to take it out and then change the budget. The budget is always built on assumptions. You don't know what all your expenses are going to be. You estimate them. You don't know what legal judgments against you or which ones you're going to beat, estimates. You don't know what tax revenue is going to be. We rely on experts. We take a few experts and average them. And so there's always some uncertainty in your budget. The way I would describe it is I've got to be able to look you in the eye and pass the laugh test. I have been assured repeatedly by both the Senate side and the House side that the monies would be in there. They, true to their word, were in the budgets. What I don't get is all of a sudden the House then passed another bill taking it out. And why that got through the Senate and why we weren't able to stop it, I don't know. You have to talk to the legislature. In Washington, this is. But then, since then, I tell you that Schumer and Gillibrand on the Senate side and our New York delegation on the House side, lots of people, all say they're working very hard to get it back in and to get it passed. And, you know, with each day goes by, I think they work harder, but the probabilities keep going down. As you get towards an election, a lot of the congressmen and senators are all of a sudden becoming very conservative in their spending, willingness to spend in Washington. Whether that's good or bad, separate issue. I have to deal with whether this bill is going to get passed. And I'm starting to get less comfortable, but when we pass the bill, I'd looked in the mirror and said, well, on balance, they keep saying it, it's a reasonable assessment. I did not. There was a bill in Congress to come up with $23 billion in education aid. I never thought that had a chance, and we never put that money in. But I can tell you this. I have always already talked to a number of our commissioners and said, you should start thinking about the next round of cuts. We've got to find a ways to continue to keep the basic services, do as much as we can, as fast as we can. But you're never going to be able to do everything or as fast as you'd like. And I want them to at least start planning. We don't have to cut back quite yet, but they should start planning for the next round. And I think everybody understands that.
The spending in the city council, it was reported, was actually up by, I think, 9% was the number. How does that happen, and how does it factor into all of this?
Look, it's all the public's money, whether it's in the mayor's budget or the city council adds it. To some extent, this is trying to get some local input. You know, the quote, the administration deals with 8.4 million people in all five boroughs. Local city council people, in all fairness, do know and do get some input on specific things. None of the things that they, quote, spend the money on are separate from the mayor's budget, because it all gets passed. They vote on one complete budget. So the mayor shouldn't be off the hook on this. I mean, I've always thought it's a little bit unfair to blame the city council for it. Everything they do gets vetted by the Department of Investigations or other appropriate agencies. And everything that they do, meaning put into the budget, doesn't get spent unless the agency that would supervise it wants to spend it. So a little bit of this is we want to do something. They want to be able to take credit or show that they're relevant. Nothing wrong with that. Whether it's in their budget or the mayor's budget, I don't think that you should blame them and let the mayor off the hook. It's all one big budget. I think if you go back a year ago, we can't at the last minute it's democracy. And everybody has an input. Either you want democracy or you don't. At the last minute, there's lots of ins and outs. And then we pass the budget. And then we do all of the appropriate vetting. And not one dime goes out. We can sometimes make a mistake and send to somebody where it turns out to be a fraud. But right. We did the vetting.
So the $63 billion that is the total budget
includes
everything.
Every penny.
So even though that 9% might be higher from last year, it really is less as the total. Is less.
I mean, people say, well, you keep cutting money, why does the budget go up? Well, built into the budget are a lot of labor contracts where we have in the previous years committed to going forward increasing compensation. Teachers who do not at the moment have a contract, it's run out, and I've said there's no money, I'd rather not give them a raise but instead use the money to keep us from having to lay off. We were going to lay off 4,500 teachers. Now we're not. We're still counting on a couple thousand attrition, but not layoffs. All of that is the teachers still get 3.5% raise every year on average. It's some years, it's a longevity thing. The longer they work, some years they get
built in escalators.
It's built, right. So even if we were to keep the budget from going up in actual dollars, and if there's inflation, you're in real dollars reducing it. But also, even if there's no inflation, because you have these built-in things, it's keeping it from, you could argue, being worse.
All right, let's take our first break here, and when we come back, we'll stay on the education. All right,
and before I forget, the real answer to your question, I think, Stu, reminds me, 1,100 layoffs and 4,200 attrition. So let's say 5,000-odd people. The budget assumes we'll have 5,000 less full-time employees.
But only 1,100 to actually be retired. Something around that number.
No, that retirements would be in the attritions and layoffs would be in
retired by the city. I mean, they just sort of eliminated by that. Interesting, because that's not a very big number when you've got 300,000 plus people.
No, on the other hand, everybody wants all the services. Our workers do work pretty hard, and they are. The private sector doesn't understand how good the people that work for New York City are. I can't tell you everyone. There's some bad people, and there's lazy crooks, all that. 99.999% of these people are much better than the private sector believes, and as good as the private sector. They are hardworking. They are creative. They've come up with ideas. They do get this. The reason when you throw the switch, the lights come on, and turn the tap, the water comes out the way I describe it, although one's done by the city, one's done by Con Ed. It's because these people work hard.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on there. 18 minutes after 8 o'clock, if you've got a 300-321-0710, if you've got a question. The story this morning about the state appellate court that ruled unanimously against the Department of Education over not giving enough info on the closure of 19 annually failing schools. They called this, one, a blow to Bloomberg, but two, a major victory for the union. I railed on this thing about a half an hour ago that I couldn't believe that the union would want to sustain 19 failing schools that the teachers and the administration are responsible for.
Well, the headline says a blow to me. I don't know how to break this to anybody. I'm through school. It's a blow to kids who, you know, if they have one more year in a bad school, you never catch up. The sad thing
is you don't get it back.
You probably don't get it back. That's exactly right. The judge ruled in the appellate court, five of them upheld it, that technically the bill says you've got to give X. It's probably true that we didn't comply with every I dotted and T crossed. It is also probably true the way the legislation's drafted, you never could. And the judges do have some discretion. They can look at the context and say, yes, you don't follow it exactly, but the spirit of the law was followed. And I thought they made a terrible mistake, and they're responsible like everybody else. Either we are going to close the bad schools and improve them and open ones that really work, or we're not. There was a study out last week. These small schools, we take a big high school, break it up into three or four or five small schools. The results are dramatically better. We're playing with children's lives, not whether the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. And, you know, you can't criticize the judges. This is not what they should be doing. They should look at the context of it. And for them to think, well, you know, I just here to interpret the law, that's not true. They are part of society, and the union should be ashamed as well. I'm sympathetic to, and I happen to think that Michael Mulgrew is a pretty good leader of the union. He's smart, and he's honest, and he tries. His job is to improve the work experience for his members, not to help the kids. His job is to get more money for the teachers, fuel working hours, better conditions. That's fine. That's what a union leader does.
That's his job description, but that shouldn't be the goal.
As a citizen, he may have another responsibility, but a defense lawyer for somebody shouldn't be, you can't say the defense lawyer is a bad person because they're defending somebody who's accused of a crime. That's not fair to them. But having said that, the union itself should be out there advocating for better schools, and this does not help get better schools. This is no question. These schools aren't working, period. Now, I'm sympathetic. They should try to work to protect their teachers, but you don't do it by keeping bad schools closed. It's society. Our legislators, the mayor, you, me, we should say we're not going to take this anymore. We're not going to sign a contract that protects bad teachers any more than they should sign. Your boss shouldn't keep you on the air, John, if people don't listen. That's nothing wrong with that. If you do a good job, you should get paid more. If you do a lousy job, you should get paid less or get fired. And the private sector is dealing with this all the time. We don't have the kind of protection that some public service workers have throughout this country, not just in New York.
Will you be able to do this again?
Absolutely. But it's a
But are you going to get sued again?
Well, I assume so. It's a 6 month. You may get different judges, and maybe next time they'll say, well, you fixed some of the things, but not others. The issue was we had the data. It wasn't on the website. Spam me, for God's sakes. The parents know that these are failing schools.
Because they didn't sign their kids up.
That's exactly right. We're going to open a bunch of schools with almost no students in them. Who would want to go to these schools when you give parents choices? This is the last place. One of the things that's change in the system. You have people in Nassau County lying about where they live. They're lying and saying they live in the city so they can send their kids to public schools in New York City.
When did that change?
Over the last few years, thank you very much. But it's Dennis Walcott, it's Joel Klein, it's the mayor, it's the teachers, it's the principals, Ernie Logan, who runs the principals union, and all of his members, and Michael Mulgrew, formerly, and Randy Weingarten before, and all their members, that we really have made a big difference. This is just ridiculous. 19 schools, that whatever number of kids go there, they will never recover from this. We're playing with people's lives here. And we will go through the process again. It'll take another 6 months or whatever, but it's another year in the school calendar. And, you know, it's how can you sit there and deliberately, the judges should have found a ways to interpret the law, and they have plenty of discretion. That's ridiculous to say they don't. To accomplish what's good for society. They are a part of society, too.
You were down in Washington with the president yesterday on his immigration appeal, and certainly you have been in the forefront. You've started, what is it, the Partnership for America, for a New America?
Yeah, a bunch of business people and mayors across the country. There's the guy who runs Boeing, the guy that runs News Corp, the guy that runs Hewlett-Packard, the guy that runs Marriott Hotels, you know, a whole bunch of people. And they are at the forefront of this coalition. We've got Mort Zuckerman, who runs the Daily News, owns the Daily News, and Rupert Murdoch, who owns the New York Post. And it's a group that says this country, if it has an economic future, we're not talking about other social issues or fairness or anything else, just from an economic point of view, if we don't have more immigrants, this country is going to have greater unemployment. And I know that the people across this country, lots of them think, oh, immigrants are taking my jobs. They're not taking their jobs. It's the people that started Google and Yahoo and Intel. And you know, these are the kinds of companies that we need to have be started here. And in fact, what's happening, people are starting to start them elsewhere in the world because they can't get green cards to come here.
Do you agree with Janet Napolitano and the president as well that securing our borders is an impossibility and not something that we should use as sort of the wall, if you will, on the remaking of immigration policy?
I don't know that the president quite said that. I don't know what Secretary Napolitano said. I listened to the president. It was, I think, sort of a little more nuanced thing. There's two things. You can control the borders, and we should control the borders. I do not think that anybody should come in illegally. In fact, in 1986, we passed laws to prevent it. We have 10 million more undocumented.
Right. We did Thank nothing you about
it. No, we did. We passed a law that we knew damn well we weren't going to enforce because everybody wanted those farm workers so that the produce would cost less. So to blame the 11, 12 million is ridiculous because you and I are also to blame. All of us are to blame. The rest of this country closed. We closed our eyes and deliberately let it happen. The ways you do, the only ways where the president's right is the only ways law enforcement is going to be able to stop people coming over the borders is if they reduce the number of people who are trying. So it's a supply and demand thing. You have to eliminate the supply of jobs in America for undocumented. And then the demand, meaning the people that try to come in, will be a lot less. And then the law enforcement officers will be able to handle it. You'll never get to zero. But
some say the recession has done that
recession,
to a certain degree.
That's exactly right. Nobody really has good numbers, but you would think that a lot of or significant number of the undocumented have gone home. America's not a good place to come to put your feet up and have the government take care of you. Compared to other places, it just isn't.
You mean there are better welfare states?
There are places that are less competitive where you can sleep outdoors all year round and just have a good old time, you know, and kismet. That's not America. What we have to do now, how do you reduce the supply of jobs? You say to the business people, you can't hire illegals or undocumented. Okay, the businesswoman or man says, how do I know? Because you can go on the streets of any big city in this country and for $50 buy a fake Social Security card for $100 or something like that, a fake green card for $500, a fake passport even. You have to give them a card that cannot be corrupted, that cannot be faked. And there are all sorts of biometric stuff, fingerprints and other kinds of things in the cards. We just don't want to do that. But you have to do that so the business person will know whether...
Why don't we want to do that?
Because we all want to complain about something, but we don't ever want to do it. And everybody says, I want to do my little piece first. And this is a problem. You have to do everything. It's four parts, quickly. You have to give five parts. You have to give the business people the ability to know whether when John Gambling applies, he's legal. Then that is going to reduce the demand. That's the second part. Third part is then you have to put your law enforcement officers on the border. We've done that, but they can't keep up. The president's right in that part because we haven't done the other part. Then businesses desperately need workers with skills. There's lots of jobs in this country that are available. We don't have the skill sets of our employees to take those, which is why we get back to that our earlier conversation about education. That's a long-term fix. We have to let the people into this country who are going to make sure that the next invention is and next business and next drug and whatever is created here and not overseas. And then we have to, last step, is do something about the 11, 12 million, whatever the number is, of undocumented. And, you know, a handful of people, that's all they want to focus on. They are sitting there deliberately making the problem worse so that they can yell and scream about this handful of people.
They're happier with the problem.
Every one of these talk show hosts was part of the problem. They never complained when the vegetables and fruit at their store were less expensive or when somebody cut their lawn for less money. The most duplicitous thing in the world. You got to do something about the 11 and 12 million. We cannot deport them. We couldn't afford it. The world wouldn't stand for it. Physically, it's impossible. And we need them in our businesses. So let's give them a path to permanent status. You got to be able to speak English. You got to can't have a criminal record. You have to pay a fine. You got to pay taxes, whatever you want. But we can't sit here and keep yelling and screaming about something that we were part of. And whether we were or we not, it doesn't matter. What about the future? I want better for my kids. I don't want the satisfaction of yelling about John Gambling and what he did in the past. That, to me, that is just dumb.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's a well-put position, and I think I agree with virtually all of it. Not 100%.
Well, then you're right.
Well, exactly, except for the part that I disagree with.
Well, I understand that.
26 now before 8 o'clock. If you've got 9 o'clock, rather. If you've got a question, 800-3 before 9 o'clock, John and Mayor Michael Bloomberg at WOR. Your reaction, Mr. Mayor, to the unemployment number dipping slightly?
The unemployment number is not the real number that you care about because the way unemployment is measured is they do a telephone survey, and it's got a pretty big margin of error. And typically, unemployment goes the unemployment rate goes up when the economy improves. Because people have hope, and so when the question on the phone is, "Are you looking for a job?" If they think they have a chance of getting it because they read the economy is going up or they feel the economy is going up, more people say yes.
So what's the better number?
The total employment number, people actually working, and that is done because that number is a much more accurate number because you have to file forms for Social Security and things like that. Okay, so, and companies have to file it for tax purposes. The employment number didn't exactly knock the cover off the ball. Fewer people working in the private sector and government unemployment. A lot of the people who were working for the census, you know, that job is basically done for a lot of them. So we'll see what the markets say about this. The economy is better in New York, not going to cover off the ball, but better. And my friends who have stores across the country say not really true for the rest of the country. Not terrible, but, you know, there's never... We talk about a double dip. We talk about a V, or a hockey stick, all these different shapes. Invariably what happens is you start from a low base. People struggle. Slowly but surely, confidence builds. The economy starts improving. With time, it starts improving at an ever-increasing rate. Alan Greenspan comes along like he did probably in 1998, 1999, sometime back then, and says it's irrational exuberance. Everybody smiles and says he's right, and then goes out and continues it. It builds to an unsustainable level. Something happens one day. The Mets and the Yankees both lose that day. Whatever it is, some crazy thing. Nobody really knows why. And all of a sudden, everybody turns bearish, and you have this crash, I guess you could describe it, but a very precipitous drop. We then start the process of looking for somebody that's responsible and punishing those that caused this terrible thing, never looking in a mirror.
What is this about?
And then it starts
years,
all
right?
over again. No, I mean, the cycles are half a dozen years, something like that. The last time we had was the end of the internet bubble, 2000 and something like that, 2001. And here it is, 2008. You have another one. So maybe 8 years, 7 years in this case. And this has been going on forever. And people keep telling me, oh, you know, this economy is going to never stop. The Chinese economy is never going to stop. The European economy is never going to stop. The American economy is never going to stop. The number of people who've invented perpetual motion machines in the 68 years I've been alive is quite substantial. But all of them, eventually, you have to rewind the clock.
Speaking of employment, earlier we were talking about the teachers and
some of the teachers
attrition is what
some of the calls we've gotten today already, people want to know, you know, is there going to be buyouts? We are not going to do buyouts. I can't tell you ever, but for the foreseeable future, it doesn't make any sense from the city's point of view, because it's very different than the private sector. In the private sector, you can go and say, well, this person or this job we don't really need, we'll give them a buyout, and that's easier ways than laying them off. In government, you have to do it, at least in New York, in reverse seniority order. And, you know, seniors, the teachers are here. We love them. And if they want to stay around, fine. If they want to retire, fine. But you would have to pay them extra money, pay them their pensions, so it would be much more expensive than if they just retired. And you got to go hire somebody else to replace them. So it doesn't make any sense economically. So I can tell you, for the foreseeable future, we are not going to have buyouts for teachers or for any other agencies. Maybe there might be some places where you really don't have to replace them. And in those agencies, it might make some sense, but I doubt it.
I'm sorry. The last 6 months or so, we've been talking about shootings and murders, numbers slightly rising. Supreme Court comes out with a unanimous decision about guns in America.
It probably does not change New York. The courts have said, this was a technical thing, really, that the Second Amendment applies to states as well as to the federal government. But they have said clearly reasonable restrictions are permissible under the Second Amendment. And we think that all of our permitting carrying laws in New York stand that test of being reasonable. In fact, we have changed some of them over the last 6 months or year to make sure we are in compliance. And so we probably are okay. It's not, the trend is not great. There's a story I was reading on the computer this morning about 20-odd states that allow carry on campus.
I know.
I mean,
and more are begging for it.
Do you remember when you went to school? Would you give yourself, forget about the others, yourself?
No.
Or me? No.
No. I can't understand it. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
It just is a very small group. It's very similar in my mind to this. Was one guy, I forget his name, it was a book, I think it's called Last Call. It was just written, I started reading it, about how one guy got the Constitution of the United States changed in a year to get rid of something that everybody loved and did, drinking. The handful of people who didn't drink.
Prohibition.
Prohibition came in. Most people drank before. Most people drank right through prohibition, which is why it's the only amendment to the Constitution, I think, that's ever been reversed. But it was done by one guy leading a small group. And that's really the thing here with the NRA. People get killed all the time. We have a Virginia Tech in this country every single day. And it's never on the John Gambling Show. It's never on the front page of the papers. Why? Because it's spread across the country. And interestingly, it is in the rural areas as well as the big cities. I mean, we all think, oh, no, all those big city guys, that's where the crime is. It's not true.
Another hospital bites the dust today. North General.
North General is biting the dust. Not a city hospital. Did not, I think in the end, not well run, didn't have a game plan. Same thing you could say about any hospital that closes. We are moving Goldwater, which is over on Roosevelt Island. It's a long-term care hospital where people who are sick for and going to be in the hospital for a very long time, maybe for their entire lives. Over to that, we're putting in a clinic, so we think that the service to the public will actually be better in terms of what you need a doctor very close in an emergency. You're bleeding, you have a stroke, you have a heart attack, that sort of thing. Triage is everything, and time is everything in triage. After that, you can drive for hours to get to a hospital to do the long-term thing, cure, set a bone, whatever. But in that area, there will be better care, we think, for the local community. And by selling the land on Roosevelt Island for development where Goldwater is, we'll have the money to have a better facility for everybody. So I'm sorry for the people. A lot of people that work at North General are going to be out of work. But it was just not a well-run hospital. And the marketplace for hospitals, like the marketplace for talk show hosts, is very competitive. You do your job or you're out.
All right. Any indication that since St. Vincent's is gone and that there's been more pressure on the remaining hospitals?
Well, I mean, you know,
not really.
There's a lot of noise in the numbers, so it not really. Yes, I think you can probably say some of the hospitals' emergency rooms are more crowded because people in emergency that would have gone there will go elsewhere. But these things do have a habit of sort of working themselves out, spreading the pain around a little bit, getting absorbed because they're changing all the time. And the good news is that the hospitals we have in this city, most of them are the best in the country. And if you go to whether it's a private hospital or a city hospital, you're going to get the best care that science knows how to deliver.
Real fast, have you gotten any information on the state budget on or are you just getting what's being
the state Senate went home till after the 4th,
eating hamburgers, not dogs,
they have not passed a revenue bill, so everything is still up in the air. The assembly, I don't know when they go home, it must be today for the weekend, they have done some things. The governor, you had him on your program, he's been vetoing a lot of this stuff.
Yes, he's still vetoing today.
Yeah, I mean, some of the stuff is just, I think a lot of these bills are just passed, and they know the governor will veto it, and they know it's a bad bill, but they have some constituents they can say, you see, I got your bill passed. And to those that don't like the bill, see, I made sure that we don't have a bill. What's your complaint?
I understand the most important thing you'll be doing over the weekend is you do the weigh-in for the hot dog
right after
eating
that
contest.
9:15, the weigh-in for the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. We've got to see who can cut the mustard with this one, John. Oh, who said, oh, I heard that.
Yeah,
the control room, gagging on that. I have a whole bunch of those things. You'll see a lot of hot dog jokes.
I understand also next week that you will be hanging out with royalty. The Queen will be in town?
Her Majesty, the Queen of England, will be here, going to visit the World Trade Center.
You had Prince Harry last week.
Prince Harry was with Prince Harry. Actually, I've met him a few times before. He's a nice guy, and I know his father, Prince Charles. Who would have thought? I grew up in a world you don't meet these people, but that's part of the job, and it is thrilling. Prince Harry is a polo player, a nice guy, been in the army, young guy, trying to build a career. Yeah, it's not so easy when you're.
You've ever met the Queen before?
Never met the Queen.
Okay.
Never met the Queen. My former wife, still a great friend, Sue, said that she, as a young girl, her father was a career officer in the Royal Air Force, and she said she met the Queen one time and curtsied for the rest of her life. She'll remember it.
Exactly.
But I'm gonna say, would you like to cut a ribbon, Your Majesty? Because there's a park, where a British-sponsored park down in Hanover Square we're going to do. So it'll be fun.
All right, let's go to the phones here in just a moment. Let me take another break. Let me see. Do we have an open phone line? We have one. 800-321-0710. All right, 6 minutes before 9 o'clock. It's your turn. Your turn, Mr. Mayor. Let's go right to the telephone. We're going to start with Lou first. Lou, you've got the mayor. Go ahead. Good morning.
Mayor Mike, you mentioned two things. One was the unemployment and the illegal immigration. When we have illegal immigrants in this country, I think that if we had some kind of a verifiable ID card, as you had mentioned, that a lot of them would go back home, and we would have young kids who are sometimes getting in trouble, have no after-school events, and seniors going back to the workforce, that they would fill those jobs.
Well, I think, look, that we have a law that says an employer can't hire an undocumented or illegal, however you refer to it. The trouble is, the employer would say, and probably right, well, but they showed me a Social Security card, and they showed, and so how did I know that they were, weren't legal? It is too easy to fake your Social Security green card or even a passport. We do need to have a card with, like, a fingerprint on it, so you can tell automatically whether it's legit or not. And if you want a national ID card, which, incidentally, there's a lot of people that say, no, 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 I don't want a national ID card. It gets into a whole nother...
We all carry one, though.
But we all carry it. That's your Social Security card. So you're right, Lou. And all we got to do is have the courage to do it. The federal government could do it. The technology's there. Every company in this day, lots of companies, not every, have ID cards with pictures on them.
And you don't get in the door unless you show it.
Absolutely. And it gets read electronically. Mine, for my company or for my... for my building, you just it's in my wallet, and it and you doesn't even have to take it out. It reads it right through the material. But you're exactly right, Lou. And there's no technological or expense reason. It's part of the solution. And the problem in Washington is everybody's got this 4 different parts to this. Everybody wants to push their own and says mine first, or I won't vote for the others. And it only works if we do all 4 at the same time. The card, the law enforcement officers on the border, the more visas for the companies that need people with skills, and dealing with the 11 million undocumented. You do 3 out of the 4, guaranteed failure. That's what we did in 86. And I don't want to be here 10 years from now, John. We could come back in 10 years.
You're saying the same thing.
Yeah. Sure, except it'd be 20 million.
All right, Lou, thank you. Let us go to Dean. Dean, you've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
And with you.
I heard your comments earlier. I'm a lifelong resident of Rockaway Beach, and I recognize that this horrendous problem exists all the way from Long Beach all the way to Coney Island. Years ago, there were jetties, number one, that broke that east-to-west current that sweeps everybody away. And they're gone. And I recognize that's part of the Corps of Engineers, or they might be responsible for that.
Dean, what's your question for the mayor?
Okay. Well, they used to have ropes with barrels that floated. They were anchored in the sand on the beach, and then they went out a bit, and they were anchored in the bottom of the water. Old ladies used to grab hold of them and walk out and get refreshed. And those two things, you know, the cheaper one, obviously, is the barrels and the ropes. What happened to them, and why are they gone?
You know, I don't know. The bottom line is that even with those, you just shouldn't go in the water if there's no lifeguards. We put up signs. John and I talk about it. You talk about it to your friends. This is just, you know, I can tell you, if enough people go into the water when there's no lifeguards, we're going to have a certain number of tragic drownings. And I think one of the problems, Dean, is that the kind of barrels you're talking about are easy on the Long Island Sound side or in bays, but in the ocean and the southern shore of Long Island from Montauk all the way to Breezy Point is, you know, the currents are so strong that the stuff just gets carried away by the least bit of a tide. It's really hard to do.
All right, Dean, thanks a lot. Let's go to Marilyn. Marilyn, your question for the mayor?
Okay, yes, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
Very nice to talk to you.
And you.
I'm calling about how the MTA has decided to cut bus and subway service, particularly below 14th Street, the Lower East Side, East Village, and Lower Manhattan seems to be hugely more disproportionately targeted for drastic cuts. The M8, the M21, the M15, the M22, the M9, the B39.
You're talking mostly buses, then?
I'm talking buses, yes. I'm a senior citizen. I live by the FDR Drive. I'm almost a full mile away from the nearest subway, and a lot of seniors, don't even take the subways anymore. So the buses are the lifeline for people in these areas. There's a disproportionate amount of seniors living on the Lower East Side along the Grand Street corridor.
Marilyn, I hate to keep coming back to the same thing, but in all fairness, the MTA, they don't have the money. Some of the bus lines overlapped, I think, like M8 and M15, so that they said, they can't afford both. The M22 wasn't very well used. The problem they have is that they don't have the money, and I don't know whether they've made the right decisions. Everybody's going to say, well, if you cut in my neighborhood, it was the wrong decision. But let's go back. We have to get people off. The M22, I think, is still unchanged. I think that still runs, if my memory serves me right. But the problem is we've got to get people out of their cars and onto mass transit. That'll give us more revenues to pay for mass transit. And then they can expand it to more buses, faster buses, more routes, better technology, all that sort of thing. The ways to do that was we had an idea, congestion pricing. Albany said no, got a better idea. Call your state senator, call your state assembly person, and start screaming, and call 311, and we'll give you the names and phone numbers.
You know, what's going to happen? I had Jay Walder in here earlier.
Very
this
smart
week.
Guy. Best appointee the governor made in his term.
And he's got almost an unwinnable situation considering his finances.
If you want one guy to run the MTA, this is the guy.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's going to do it for us. Enjoy your 4th of July.
You too, and stay out of the water if there's no lifeguards, and don't let your kids play with fireworks. We used to have 100+ every year, losing fingers. Now it's down to zero.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Enjoy it. I will not be here next weekend, so we'll see you next
time. Winner of the New York State Broadcasters.